Fridays on Scoops with DannyMac.com, and we always have the chance to visit with Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and STLtoday.com. And, Ben, it's disappointing. No Mizzou football against Georgia this weekend. As a matter of fact, not a lot of SEC football, generally speaking, as the virus has made its way into a number of programs. So let's start with football. We're going to get into some baseball, some college basketball as well, but just your thoughts on what's happening right now with the SEC. And this is, according to Greg Sankey, you know, he's shook. He's not bending all the way to breaking, but this has kind of bended the SEC a little bit, hasn't it?
Yeah, this is worst case scenario for the SEC, Dan. You've got more games postponed on Saturday than you'll have SEC games played. The good news here is that the conference baked in some of those bye weeks into their schedule because they figured, unlike the Big Ten and the Pac-12, that they were going to have some COVID-related turbulence. So the good news is the SEC can find ways to play these games later when it's safe. Conferences like the Big Ten and the Pac-12, they just don't play them at all, which is going to lead to some really bizarre looking schedules by the time this is over. But specifically unfortunate for Mizzou, because I thought they were in a good spot to play Georgia. The Bulldogs had taken a beating at Florida last week. Their chance of winning a national championship is almost certainly out the window. Mizzou has played so much better at home. They had a bye week to get ready for this game. Georgia's offense is very, very pedestrian, and their defense had a lot of injuries mounting. You kind of like Mizzou's chances of going out and maybe pulling off an upset, entering what will be an easier stretch to the finish of their season. They got the hard work out of the way, and they should have a chance in pretty much every game after Georgia. An upset there would have been big for the final weeks, but as we are reminded, the biggest threat to any college football team right now is COVID. Mizzou doesn't have an outbreak like they're seeing at LSU, at some of these other schools. LSU specifically has been reportedly tied back to some sort of a Halloween party on campus. The problem with Mizzou is they have a positive along their defensive line that led to a quarantining and contact tracing that didn't leave them with enough viable defensive linemen in order to play this game. There's only three positions that require a certain number of players available in addition to just the overall number for the roster, and it's quarterback, offensive line, and defensive line. And Jim Sterk revealed in an interview with Paul Feinbaum that it was their defensive line that was short because of this latest COVID test. So there's good news that Missouri's continuing to be able to practice and they're not shut down as a team, but they didn't have enough linemen cleared to be ready for this game. So now we wait to see what could happen. This game could end up getting played the same week as the SEC championship game, which makes you wonder how checked out Georgia might be, because they hope to be playing in the SEC championship, not a makeup game. So we'll see. But for the conference as a whole, this is where it didn't want to be. And you just wonder how this is going to play out now. As we move deeper into winter, there will be some teams like Georgia that have been very good at avoiding the virus at this point, but you wonder maybe as seasons start to go sideways, are players going to be as diligent about keeping up with protocols? We're seeing, the news out of Mizzou that they're going to go to mostly online classes after the holiday break. So this is going to be a continued conversation here. I think there's still right now a chance as to if this is going to work out, but the SEC is going to hope that taking some time off for some teams will allow them to get back to work and finish this thing out.
College basketball, there was the A-10 virtual media day, and SLU, men's side, is predicted to finish second. I like them to win the conference. I don't know about you. Maybe I'm a homer, but I see what they have coming back. They've got great talent coming back. Hassan French, Jordan Goodwin, Javonte Perkins. And if there's anybody that's going to come out of this season, I think maybe ahead of the game a little bit, is SLU. Because recruiting, we don't know how this is going to affect things, but they've got young players coming back. So they're kind of stacking the classes. But let's talk about them being second in the A-10. Did you agree with that assessment?
I think they have a chance to win it along with you. I think it's great for Travis that they weren't picked to win it, because now he can pound it into their team that they're being underappreciated, which that's great coaching motivation. Nobody remembers where you were ranked entering the season. It's where you are when you finish things up. And I like their team a lot. They return a ton of experience. If those guys can all get a little bit better, and then some of the players who had lesser roles can improve, I think they have a chance to not only have a really good starting rotation, but a really effective bench. I love for them that Gibson Jimerson is healthy. We didn't know at this point last year if Fred Thatch was going to be healthy enough to play. We wondered if he might transfer out and have to go play at a different level. He's back, and it sounds like Travis is expecting him to contribute. They should be as good as they were last season, and you can find a lot of reasons that if they can take a step forward in individual ways, they should be better. If this team just made some more free throws, and I know Travis doesn't like to talk about it, but it was interesting to hear Goodwin talk this week about the ways that they are working to improve that phase that held them back last year. More accountability, more punishment for missed free throws in practice. You know, if their guards can make a normal amount of free throws and French can get a little bit better, then I think they probably win 3, 4, 5 more games. I think they're a dangerous team. I think losing the shot at a tournament really hurt them last year. And they have a lot of guys who have a lot to play for. So I think they're going to be a top 25 team soon into the season. They're not ranked in the preseason poll, but I think they're going to get in there and belong in there.
The bragging rights game, it's at least going to go on, we hope. Fingers crossed, knock on wood. So we're going to have it at either Illinois or Mizzou. It's a coin flip, which is kind of fun. What do you think about making sure that this rivalry continues on?
Well, first off, I'm glad that they're having it still, and it's a credit to Mizzou and Illinois for continuing it. I wish it was in St. Louis, although if they're not going to be fans there, then I don't know what difference that makes. And hopefully it will get back there as soon as possible when we're on the right side of this godforsaken pandemic. You always worry when something like this happens if it's going to be the start of a move to get it back to campus. It doesn't sound like that's the case here, so I do know that that's such an important holiday tradition for so many families in our area to be able to go to that game and have that kind of center their Christmas calendar. So I'd like to see that continue. Now it should be a heck of a game and a good measuring stick. Illinois is getting the love, right? They're going to be ranked. They are ranked, and some think that they're a Final Four caliber team with the guys that Brad Underwood brought in, and also the guys that they got to not enter the NBA draft. Mizzou, probably a little more quiet on that end because they don't have any splashy new additions, but they do have everybody who contributed last year back. They've got guys who have now more experience. They have guys who have hopefully taken steps forward. Konzo Martin's teams are almost always the teams that are most quiet entering the season, and this fits that mold. So I talked to Konzo not that long ago. I said, what's the big, you know, emphasis on this season? He usually has one or two things that he's trying to incorporate. He just said W-I-N, win. So that's he knows that a good game against Illinois, making it three straight, would be a significant win for this team and get people talking about his Tigers. So it's always a good measuring stick, and I'm glad that it's sticking around this year.
I'm curious to see what other owners think about in Major League Baseball switching gears to Steve Cohen taking over the Mets. He becomes the richest owner in baseball, and he's a Mets fan. He is saying, I want to win. In 3 to 5 years, if we don't have a World Series, it could be looked at as somewhat disappointing. Looks like he's there to spend money. I shudder to think how much money he may spend, but he may become the East version of what we're seeing with the Dodgers. What do you think?
I think you're right, man. And this guy will spend crazy. Like a lot of owners, you know, spending crazy means, okay, go give a 10-year big contract. This guy spent like $10 million on some piece of art for the Mets that, like, I don't even know what it is. So, yeah, I think he'll throw some money around on contracts. Just look at some of the artwork that he's purchased over the years. He's probably going to get a sternly worded memo from Rob Manfred, if he hasn't already, that said, look, man, you're one of us now. You're an owner. Start talking about how tough it is for business these days. Start talking about how we're not in an era where we can spend like we have in the past because of the pandemic, because what Cohen is saying is not matching up with what we're hearing a lot from other owners. This is all, of course, backed by the current situation where they weren't able to have fans in the stands for 2020, the unknown about what 2021 will look like. And let's be honest, Dan, a lot of this rhetoric has to do with the fact that there's going to be a new CBA after the 2021 season. And this has been growing year by year. We've talked about it a lot. Owners versus players. How much money is there to go around? The owners are incentivized now to talk about how they can't possibly spend as much because they're not making as much. And it's not a coincidence that they're one season away from having to look at the revenue pie and decide if players should get more. So all these things are lining up, and here comes Cohen, and he's talking about spending crazy and how he can afford to roll the dice. And I think he's probably going to irritate some of his fellow owners here.
I would think so. And I also think that if you look at a landing place for Francisco Lindor, the Mets may have a matchup for a trade. And then Lindor, if he's going to spend money, you know, you're talking about a Mookie Betts potential Mookie Betts type contract, which is way over 10 years and way over $300 million. Maybe. I'm not sure. I'd have to ask around exactly how much they think he's going to make. But we're talking about a significant investment. That's one of the landing spots that would make sense to me with Lindor.
Yeah, I agree. You're not going to trade for 1 year of Francisco Lindor unless you're pretty confident that you're going to go to bat to keep him from going to free agency with the kind of extension offer that is going to make him decide he doesn't want to take that big bite at the apple that could be his. I mean, he's a young player, 26. He is in line with the Bryce Harper, the Manny Machados, the Mookie Betts of guys who are going to get those big staggering deals. Unless he just feels like that money's not going to be there post pandemic, then the only reason he would take an extension somewhere before that free agency experience would be as if he gets an offer that he feels like is suitable to what he would have gotten as a free agent in a place he wants to keep playing. So any team that trades for him has to, I think, be willing to really stretch to give him that kind of deal. I've heard a lot of Cardinals fans say that would make so much sense for the Cardinals. They should go get him. Well, understand what it would cost to trade for him. And then on top of whatever you trade away to get him for 1 year, you've got to pay him to stay and not look at other offers. And would it be great to see Francisco Lindor in St. Louis? Hell yeah. Be fun to watch, and he would keep their defense sound and help their offense and answer a lot of questions. But he's also would command the kind of contract that we have seen the Cardinals not be willing to give free agents. And this is different than a Paul Goldschmidt extension. Paul Goldschmidt was 30-31. Lindor is in the prime of his career, and he's going to command that kind of contract. So unrealistic, I think, for the Cardinals. I'd happily love to say I was proven wrong by their actions, but to me, the Mets would be a much more likely landing place for Lindor.
Who are some of the names out there? I know you dive into this, but there's going to be December 2nd. You've got a bunch of guys that probably will not be tendered contracts or at least looked at with arbitration. So there's another wave of players that could hit the open market for teams to sign, and you would have to think that all teams are going to be taking a hard look at that. So maybe waiting until early December to make some decisions on what they do in free agency. But the free agency period has opened up. We know the Cardinals need offense. Are there any names out there that really pique your interest that you think could be a fit?
There are a lot of names. I think that's the good news for the spot the Cardinals are in. There's going to be affordable offensive talent available in this free agent class before we even get into potential trades. I mean, at the top of the list, yeah, George Springer, DJ LeMahieu, and if those are too rich than what the Cardinals are willing to spend, and it sounds like, you know, they're one of their primary goals is to cut payroll. Okay, well, you can still find ways to improve the offense. It's going to require more risk, but it's also going to come in what we predict is going to be a financial climate where guys who would have expected multi-year million-dollar contracts are now having to take a little bit less. These guys might have some asterisks by them for different reasons, whether their age or their recent performance, but all could offer significant power upgrades for a lineup that doesn't need to remake itself entirely. The Cardinals just need to do some more damage. They need to drive in some more runs when they get guys on base. I wonder about a guy like Nelson Cruz. He's old. He's 40. But he's done is crush, 40 to 45 home runs over the past seven seasons. I think the Twins would like to have him back, but maybe he can be got on like a 2-year, deal that would look, cost affordable. There's other names if you really want to get risky and cheaper. Yonas Cespedes, Yasiel Puig, even Ryan Braun. He would be hated here until he played here, and then I think right. Cardinals fans would embrace him if he hit home runs. Look, don't tell me Ryan Braun could not be, turn into a guy Cardinals fans like to cheer when he hits home runs in the Big Mac land, okay? Mark McGwire is beloved here. Ryan Braun, if he hit a bunch of homers, they could figure out a way to root him on too. You know, there's other options too. Jock Peterson's a free agent. Maybe he could be that kind of a platoon type answer with Harrison Bader in center field. They would kind of help the lineup even out against right-handed and left-handed pitching. Peterson crushes right-handed pitching. Harrison Bader tends to do really well against left-handed pitching. Maybe a tag team type there. I mean, there are a million different potentials where you could look at and say, hey, that could help, especially if there is the DH in the National League in 2021.
It's
That's
coming.
The thing that we don't know right yet, but I do think it will be back, and I think the teams will have a good idea soon. The other guy, too, while we're throwing out names, what about Edwin Encarnacion? He didn't have a very good year in 2020. He still hit 10 home runs, which was more than the Cardinals had, one hitter produced by three. He hit 10 home runs, and it wasn't good. He was declined the $12 million option, but he still, you know, has been right around Aaron Judge-like in homers per at-bat going back to 2018. If you're going to take a shot on a DH, that might not be the worst guy in the world.
I think it's fascinating to see if the Cardinals just say, okay, next year, kind of an outlier. Tyler O'Neill, here's 500 at-bats. Lane Thomas, here's 500 at-bats. Good, bad, ugly, excellent, whatever. But we're sticking with you no matter what. I'd be curious to see what the numbers would be for those two guys.
I'm more curious about Lane Thomas than Tyler O'Neill. You know, I think Lane Thomas, I think he really was affected by this COVID. When he came back, he didn't look right. And Mo has even said after the season that he was one of the players who really experienced some more problems than was known at the time. So I'd like to see what he could become. He only received about the same amount of at-bats this season that he got last season. I don't think we learned that much about Lane Thomas this year, and I'm not ready to say that he can't be a starter for this team. I'm a little more suspect about Tyler O'Neill, Dan. I look at the at-bats, and he's had 130 at-bats for three seasons in a row now at this level, right about the same amount of opportunity for three consecutive years. And his numbers have dropped pretty steadily in each of those seasons. You know, whether you're looking at the average, which took a big hit this year, or the damage, which has dropped now from 500, a 500 slugging percentage in 2018 as a 23-year-old, which kind of made everybody sit up in their seats and go, hey, this guy needs some more opportunity. It dropped to 411 the next year in 19, and then all the way down to 360 this season. His adjusted OPS, Dan, has dropped from 115 with 100 being league average to 90 in year two, all the way down to 68 this year. His speed, his athleticism is attractive. His defense is clearly better than I realized. You know, he wins the Gold Glove this year, but he's there for power. He's there to hit, and his hit tool has not been as powerful as we thought it would be, and it seems to be moving in the wrong direction after his age 25 season. So I could sign up for more Lane Thomas, but I'm a little more hesitant about Tyler O'Neill.
I'm going to assume that Tommy Edman is at second base. Currently constructed, he would be, but gone. Max Schrock, he's now a member of the Cubs. We don't know about Brad Miller. Colton Wong, option wasn't picked up. So you think about the middle infield. Let me throw some names out there just for fun and see if any of these tickle your fancy, all right? Here we go. Jonathan Scope. He was a guy that had great power a couple of years ago, down year after that. He was acquired by the Milwaukee Brewers and didn't do much. Tommy La Stella, he can play second base. He can play third. I was looking at Cesar Hernandez, a switch hitter. Jonathan Villar, a career OPS of 727. So there are some guys that could fill that potential role, but I'm just curious if anybody kind of stands out there and you go, oh, yeah, that guy kind of interests me. Anybody there?
Yeah, La Stella would be the one for me.
Me too.
Because of the power. I think if you're going to do it, if you're going to do that, you really prioritize what you don't have, right? And that's power. La Stella kind of had, you know, he's had some ups and some downs, but his power has been pretty consistent in his more recent seasons. He had the 486 slug in 19. That was an all-star year for him with the Angels, and he slugged 449. This year between two teams of the Angels and Oakland. So, you know, he's shown that he can hit double digit home runs. If I'm going to take a shot at one of those guys, he's the name that jumps up to me as I was kind of crunching numbers with an emphasis on power.
Yep. That's the guy too. And if you're not going to have defense with Wong and you're saying, hey, we need to improve with our offense, La Stella might be that guy. That's kind of the way I look at it.
Yeah, I see your logic there, and I think that that's going to be, I think, the story of this offseason, and it's really why the Cardinals, if their main goal is to find ways to boost the offense while also not increasing or perhaps decreasing payroll, then why not get as many of these guys on reasonable deals as you can and let them fight it out? We're talking about low-stakes poker here. I mean, do you think there's going to be a bidding war for Tommy La Stella this offseason? I don't, but he could help the Cardinals. So go get – don't get one guy and say we're banking everything on him. Get a few of them.
Mm-hmm.
Get some of these guys who are looking around hoping to get early offers because they're not sure if they're going to be playing in 2021. Send everybody to spring training, and don't be afraid to cut your losses when you find the one that works. I mean, power – the good thing about the way the game is going – power is available, and it's more probably easier to find than it has been in a long time. But the Cardinals don't have enough of it. They've been the lowest slugging team in back-to-back postseasons. Someone else is, you know, Cardinals fans will groan because they will call this, you know, dumpster diving. But when it comes to this skill that they're lacking, power, there will be players who are let go from other teams or not pursued that would be beneficial for the Cardinals to pick up. Affordable power is there for the taking, and the Cardinals – no pun intended, they can't afford not to try to find some.
And one of the big storylines even right now will be their rotation. Let's just say minus Adam Wainwright, you would have Flaherty, you'd have Kim, you would hope a healthy Michaelis, and then 4 and 5 is up for grabs. Carlos Martinez, final year of his deal. He's returning from a COVID situation, did not pitch well this year. A wild card in that, maybe Alex Reyes. I look at Gomber and Ponce de Leon also in the conversation. I look at Oviedo and Woodford needing more seasoning maybe in the minor leagues if they're going to be starters. In the bullpen, I tell Hennessy, Cabrera, Ryan Helsley, John Gant, hey, stretch out as a starter. We'll see what we have in spring training. But I do think that's how the Cardinals are probably positioning this right now.
Yeah, I'm not worried about their pitching. I've just kind of sworn off getting – worked up about the rotation. I think anybody who wants to start, you send them to spring training with a chance to start, then you start weeding it out from there. I want to see what Alex Reyes can do in that capacity. If he can't, I'm making him an elite reliever, and I'm doing it quickly. I want to see what Ponce and these other guys can do with that shot. But make it a competition, take the best, and find roles for everybody else in the bullpen. I mean, that's to me is the ticket. You know, you want a shot, go prove it. And if you're not getting it done there, then we're going to make you an important part of this bullpen. I mean, we also have to talk about, you know, some of these young guys we didn't see last year. You know, you wonder how close some of these young pitchers are and if there's an Oviedo 2.0 in that mix. They have so many arms. I really don't think fretting about the pitching is something that makes all that much sense. The question will be, I think, is if they do take a step back defensively with Wong leaving, although that's not a position at second where you go, that's going to make or break your defense. He was a significant plus there defensively. I mean, look at his wins above replacement and where it ranked this season and what was an uncharacteristic offensive year for him. If they hold the line with pitching, and I think they can, then where does the increase come? It has to come from the offense. They have to do some offensive maneuvering that gets them, you know, that position closer to National League average, not just to overcome what they didn't have last year, but to overcome the loss of a Gold Glove second baseman. So the pitching, you have the arms, you just got to find the right ones, and you can always add. I mean, just like we're talking about offense, there's going to be pitchers available. So I wouldn't, if I'm the Cardinals, I would make this offseason all about improving the offense. And then I would trust my pitchers to that I would find a reliable staff when I got there based on what I have and the promise that I've seen from guys beforehand. The one thing is too, we can end this talk about Kim. He's in the rotation. So that's a guy that can be counted upon there. And I still think right now, I still think the chances of Wainwright being back are pretty good.
I would agree with that. And the other thing, and I'll wrap it up with this, you mentioned KK. So he's on a 2-year deal. And I think about guys in spring training that could get that extension potentially. And that's something that John Mozeliak has done many, many times. Spring training, kind of a time to extend guys that maybe buy out arbitration years or potential free agents. I would think the Cardinals at least dip their toe in the water with Flaherty and say, what are you thinking? Is Tommy Edman one of those guys? Certainly Kim would be, even at an advanced age, 32, 33, maybe somebody you look at. And I'll throw a kind of a wild idea out there. What about Dylan Carlson? Now, I know he's not arbitration eligible, but we've seen a trend in baseball, even for some players, before they even hit the major leagues, they're extended because teams want to lock them up and have security with it and have an idea of budgets going forward. I don't know. I'm just kind of thinking outside the box here and with those names that I just threw at you.
Yeah, Carlson would make sense. You wonder about like Jack Flaherty, if the Cardinals could make him an offer after what was a disappointing season for him in 2020, make him an offer that would look, you know, eye-popping to him as a young man who's been on the low end of major league salaries to try to lock him up. But here's my thing, though, Dan, and if I'm the president of a baseball team, I'm not worried about extensions this spring.
Because of the CBA.
I don't know if...
Yep.
There could be a work stoppage. I don't want to sign a bunch of extensions before the landscape of the game could shift dramatically. So unless there's a guy that I have to extend, then I'm completely fine just saying, hey, we're going to worry about what baseball looks like in 2022 before we start giving out contracts, you know, based off of those seasons. And I don't, you know, that might make some players angry, I guess, but I don't know that the Cardinals have anyone currently that they cannot afford to wait to extend. And is Dylan Carlson going to be so much harder to extend after they figure out what the 2022 season looks like than he will be before it? Perhaps, but not so much so that it's going to completely change the payroll for years to come. I would pause. I would wait. But that's just me. I mean, we've seen how much things can change. So I would be hesitant to offer a multi-year deal to anybody until I know what that next CBA looks like.
Yeah, I think it's all dependent on the CBA, and that's why you're going to see a lot of one-year deals probably coming the direction of the Cardinals.
Here's the other thing, man. I mean, if you're a player, if you're a Jack Flaherty, and so much talk around this next CBA is about finding ways to increase the amount of money that is given to young players who are pitching well or playing well and demanding, you know, really providing more value than they're being rewarded for, right? If you think that conversation is going to make headway in these negotiations, wouldn't you and your agent be reluctant to take a deal based off of
sure.
before you see how you could be? So it kind of goes both ways. I think there's a real standoff over this, over the way baseball is structured right now. So it's always easy for a player to say he won't take an extension until it's offered. And then that life-changing money can make you change your mind quick. And I wouldn't put it past that. But I just think that right now it's all about a standoff to figure out how things are going to change. So I wonder if this will be an extensionless spring for the Cardinals.
Ben, as always, great stuff. We do this every Friday on Scoops with DannyMac.com. There's plenty of content on the website, including a visit with Chris May, Travis Ford, Chris Raby, his daily show, a lot of look at what's happening with the Masters, and all kinds of content on the website. Wednesdays with Walton. So take it in. Enjoy it. We appreciate your time, Ben, and I'll catch up with you next Friday. Thanks for doing this.
Sounds good, brother. Talk soon.